Chapter 16. Toward the end of the day, two fappers, both of them lean and alert young men, showed up at my door. Silently, they examined the shoe ad I had received in the mail. I showed them the piece of paper on which I had written the encoded message that I had extracted.
"Ah, I'm Agent Townsend," the first fapper said. "And this is my teammate, Agent Snow. It was very alert of you to report this, Mr. Brady."
I said truthfully, "I knew it would be coming. I even knew the day."
"I imagine," Agent Townsend said, "that the Communist would very much like to control someone in your position. You have power over a large number of recording artists, do you not?"
"Yes," I said.
"You can sign up and record whomever you wish."
"I need the approval of two other executives," I said, "but usually they go along with me."
"They have come to respect your judgment."
"Yes," I said.
"How has the party contacted you before?"
Agent Snow asked.
"They never before.
We realize they never turned the screws before. But did they contact you through mutual friends, or by phone, or mail, or directly through their agents?"
"I don't know," I said. "I know the contact, the pressure, has been there, but it's been too devious and subtle up until now to put my finger on."
"No one person in particular?"
"No," I said. Agent Townsend said,
"This is the first time they've come out overtly, then."
"Yes," I said.
"In your case," Agent Townsend said, "they made a mistake. We have a mail intercept on you, Mr. Brady. We intercepted this document and decoded it ourselves. We knew the hour of its arrival in your mailbox. You were watched as you took it upstairs to this apartment. You were timed as to how long it took you to react to it. And, of course, we were looking to see your reaction. Frankly, we didn't expect you to call us. We assumed you'd destroy it."
"My wife suggested I destroy it," I said. "But that could have been taken two ways."
"Oh, yes," Agent Townsend said. "Two ways easily. You read the encoded message and then burned it. That's a normal process for party members. They wouldn't leave something like this lying around after they had assimilated its contents. It'd be incriminating."
The Sybil had directed me right. Inwardly, without any visible sign, I sighed with relief. "Thank God for her," I said to myself. "On my own, like Rachel, I most likely would have destroyed it, imagining that was enough, and thus incriminated myself forever. Destroying it would have proved I had read it, that I knew what it was. One does not carry a harmless shoe ad to the bathroom and set fire to it in the bathtub." Studying the name and address written on the back of the document, Agent Townsend said to Agent Snow,
"This looks like, you know, that girl's handwriting."
To me, he said,
"Your friend, Phil Dick, knows a girl named Vivian Kaplan. Do you know her?"
"No," I said, "but he's mentioned her."
"You wouldn't have any samples of her handwriting around?"
Agent Townsend asked. "No," I said.
"Vivian is a rather far-out person," Agent Townsend said with a half-smile. "She reported about you recently, Mr. Brady, that you hold prolonged conversations with God. Is that true?"
"No," I said.
"She got it from his friend,"
Agent Snow pointed out to Agent Townsend.
"What?"
Agent Townsend continued.
"Would possibly give rise to such an idea in her head. Can you think of anything?"
I said, "I never met the girl."
"She is reporting on you,"
Agent Townsend said. "I know that," I said.
"What would your feelings toward her be,"
Agent Townsend said,
"if evaluation of this shoe ad document showed that it emanated from her?"
"I would want nothing to do with her," I said.
"Well, we are not really sure," Agent Townsend said. "And in all likelihood, it emanated from the KGB in New York. But until we are positive, we have to consider the outside possibility that one of our own posts mailed it off to you."
I said nothing.
"What we'd like you to do," Agent Snow said, "is pass on to us any further documents of this sort which you may receive, or any contacts with suspicious persons coming in any form whatever, phone or mail or at your door. You realize, of course, that the party may have decided to destroy you for your unwillingness to cooperate with them.
Yes, I said. I know that.
I mean physically destroy. Kill.
I felt cold hearing that. Terribly cold.
There's not much we can do to help you, Agent Snow said. In that regard, if someone wants to kill a person, they usually can.
Could you assign anyone to stay with me? I said. The two FAP agents exchanged glances.
Afraid not, Agent Townsend said. It exceeds our authority, and we don't have the manpower. You can, if you wish, buy a handgun. That might be a good idea, especially in view of the fact that you have a wife and small child.
I'll do that, I said.
We will okay it,
Agent Townsend said. Then you don't think one of your own posts sent this, I said.
Frankly, I doubt it very much, Agent Townsend said. We'll conduct a routine inquiry. It would certainly simplify everything from our standpoint. May I take this ad and the envelope?
Certainly, I said. I was glad to have it out of my hands. That night I sat out alone on the patio of our apartment, gazing up at the stars. By now I knew what had happened to me. For reasons I did not understand, I had become plugged into an intergalactic communications network, operating on a telepathic basis. Sitting there in the dark by myself, I experienced the stars overhead and the enormous amount of traffic flowing between them. I was in touch with one station in the network, and I gazed up trying to locate it, although most likely locating it was impossible. A star system with a name out of our own devising. I knew the star's name. It was Albemuth. But I could find no such star listed in our reference works, although the prefix Al was common to stars, since it signified the word the in Arabic. There I sat, and there overhead twinkled and glowed the star Albemuth, and from its network came an infinitude of messages in assorted unknown tongues. What had happened was that the AI operator of Albemuth Station, an artificial intelligence unit, had raised me at some prior time and was holding the contact open. Therefore, information reached me from the communications network whether I liked it or not. It was the voice of the AI unit which I saw in dreams as the Roman Sibyl. In point of fact, it was not the Roman Sibyl, not at all, and really not a woman. It was a totally synthetic entity.
But I loved the sound of her voice. I still thought of the entity as her, since whenever I heard it, either in my head, during a hypnagogic or hypnopompic state, or in dreams, it meant that I would soon be informed of something.
Beyond the AI voice, the synthetic female voice, lay Valis himself, the ultimate constituent link to the universe-wide communications network. Now that I had peaked in my rapport with it, enormous amounts of material were flooding across. Ever since the phosphine activity, they were evidently jamming it to me, feeding me as much as possible, in case, perhaps, the contact was broken. They had never visited Earth. No actual extraterrestrials had landed ships and walked around here. But they had informed certain humans now and then throughout the ages, especially in ancient times. Since my contact came in most strongly between 3 and 4 a.m., I realized that probably a booster satellite of alien origin orbited Earth, a slave communication satellite that had been sent here thousands of years ago.
"What are you doing sitting out on the patio?"
Rachel asked me.
"Listening," I said.
"To what?"
"To the voices of the stars," I said, although more accurately I meant the voices from the stars. But it was as if the stars themselves spoke, as I sat there in the chilly dark, alone except for my cat, who was out there out of custom anyhow. Each night Pinky sat on the railing of the patio, communing as I was, but over a longer period of time, over his entire adult life. Seeing him now, I understood that he was picking up information in the night, from the night, from the pattern of blinks that came by starlight. He was hooked up with the universe, as he sat here now, like myself, gazing upward silently. The fall of man, I further realized, represented a falling away from contact with this vast communications network and from the AI unit expressing the voice of Valis, which to the ancients would be the same as God. Originally, like the animal beside me, we had been integrated into this network and had been expressions of its identity and will operating through us. Something had gone wrong. The lights had gone out on Earth.